live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Here's the deal, boys. I can't say that I've ever looked at the world and said I feel despair. But after that, after the show last week, talking about that adultery article, and then I was listening to some. I tend not to listen to talk radio. I try to stay away from it. But my family was gone, and I made bad decisions. And so, I don't remember what I was listening to, but like. It just seemed like such a moral degradation. Oh, I'm starting to sound like a
like a talk show radio man.
Yeah, I know. but it was something actually akin to what Mike was saying just before the show started. Like you don't even know how to connect with people that have certain lines of thought anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Cuz you're like usually it's like I don't want to spend a bunch of time on this particular topic necessarily, but like it used to be that people would have discussions about abortion in at all versus abortion in the case of incest or rape.
Sure.
Right? And so like the grounds are this seems like a wrong thing, but there's some extreme circumstances. What do we think about those types of things, right? And that used to be kind of the realms of your discussion. Now you're much broader in, you know what, I'm okay with this completely. In fact, it's good. And I think we should just do
good
and moral.
We should
just kill children.
Yeah, that's right. It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. And take that issue and then insert any issue
yeah.
and say
yeah.
where we're like, we went from the discussion of should we allow this in some cases where it's just really crazy stuff happened, and like we're trying to weigh, things. Should we allow this in the slightest bit of cases to, you know what, we allowed it in those cases. Maybe we should allow it all the time. And then, hey, this is just a good thing. I don't know why we haven't been doing this all the time.
Yeah. Why has this ever been a problem? And so, like, it seems very difficult to have, and this hit me, sometime in the last couple of days, I just had like a 15-second moment of like, oh man.
Yeah.
I feel like we're lost. We've lost. Lost. There's no fighting. We've lost.
this took me back to high school. When I was in high school, and it's probably, the time of my prime, like, growth spiritually.
Yeah.
Well, college would have been really, but it was really.
Boy, Dan, that's been a long time ago.
I know. I'm not saying I stopped. I'm saying that's like the initial, you always go back to the initial, like, you're really getting it thing.
Yeah. Sure.
And I remember my heart would just ache from my friends telling the stories of what they were doing. I just hurt for them. And like the music that was on. Which is no different than today, the sexual overtones and everything, and I just would grieve for my generation, and somewhere along the line, I guess I've buffered myself, I've hardened myself, I'm like, yeah, whatever, I've focused myself on other things, but this week, since that stupid survey we talked about last week, today I almost wept sitting in a barbecue place having some chicken and a song came on from the 80s, basically saying, hey, come on, what are you wasting your time for, you're looking pretty hot, let's do this, and I'm just like, oh, how many girls listened to that and said, yeah, I really should give my body to you. And
right.
It just hurt. It breaks my heart.
What was I watching? It was last night. We were watching some sort of, thing about China on the National Geographic Channel. Hmm. And they were advertising in the interim a show on, it was on there, one of the other channels, where it's like blind date marriage. Like you show up. And you've never met this person, but you're going to marry them today. And so the big reveal is when they start to walk down the aisle, and that's when you meet them for the first time. And so it's only a commercial for it, right? But like the voiceover at the end is like one of the ladies is participating, and she says the following. She says something to the extent of, this is a big risk, and it's a really big move in your life, but I feel like this is totally worth it. And I'm like, what? What?
worth what?
What about this is like –
Now, is this a Chinese show?
No.
Or that, the show you were watching was Chinese. This was an advertisement.
Yeah,
American
I just wanted
show.
Some cultural information on China.
Because in some cultures, that's like, well, you don't meet them until the wedding day.
But your parents did.
Yeah, somebody
I mean,
did.
Yeah.
So, and the gist of the show is that the people are being tested for compatibility by, like, experts. And experts. Now, here's the deal. I work in data. Like, my Monday to Friday job, I work in data. And, like, data will do whatever you want it to do.
Yeah.
It's an agnostic party, all right? It just flows through places. You tell it where to go. You tell it what you want to know.
Oh, they both like petunias.
Yeah.
They should get married.
And I see, now I'm, and here's the problem. It's like, now I'm interested. Now I'm like, well, how well did it do? But like, because they've got me to buy into the premise as if the premise isn't, I know it's outrageous, but like, I've gotten past that. And now I want to know, how were their data models? Do people stay together based upon these things? And because it got me in some kind of stupid curiosity about something that is none of my damn business and things that I don't want to know about and I should not perpetuate, like, that's how it happens.
Yeah.
That's how it happens.
That is how it happens.
And so like, I got to thinking about it, and my kids were sitting there. We were watching this China thing together, and I see my daughters are kind of taking in these commercials, and they're not really thinking about it. But I thought to myself, like, what do they even need to know? This is out here,
right?
That like people are getting married with no idea who they are, and like look at how God treats marriage and the images that He gives between relationships between Him and His people as a marriage, and then look at how we treat it culturally, and I think to myself, ugh.
Yeah, talk about taking the Bible in out of context, right? You try to explain the marriage of the bride of Christ to Christ, and people have this thing of marriage where like, oh, I could just throw it away, really. I just get rid of it if it doesn't work. And when, you know, when those words were written and when what they were meant to say is like an everlasting bond that does not change, and you serve each other, and that's the way it works. And now, it's just like when, you know, we have a hard time relating to when people talk about God the Father. We have a generation of folks that grew up without a dad, and you try to explain to them how God is a father-like figure, and they're like, well, if he has anything to do with fathers, I'm not interested. And
yeah,
so, like,
yeah.
The things that we used to be able to back out against and say, look, you know, metaphors for God to help people understand, parables even, you know, it's like a dad, or it's like a marriage, and they're like, well, you know, those are both throwaway items. Here in the last, you know, couple hundred years. So, I mean, it doesn't cross the boundary like it used to.
Yeah. Well, that's just, oh man. I got lured into another survey.
Oh no.
And it's called The Skeptical State of Bible Reading in 2017. It says, for the most part, Americans have positive things to say about the Bible. More than half call it a good source of morals, 52%. About a third say it's helpful, 37%. True, 36%. And life-changing, 35%, according to a new Lifeway research survey. Even more told the American Bible Society and Barna Group that they believe it's the actual or inspired word of God, 81%.
What?
Lest we reconcile our problems. 81% say it's the inspired word of God, 52% it's a good source of morals.
Okay, so hold on. A quick pause on this thing. I had this exact conversation at work this week, and it had to do with someone breaking into your house, right? And so we were having this discussion about what happens if somebody breaks into your house or whatever. And I said, you know, basically if they show up, let's say I meet them at the front door and they're like, I'm here to rob you. And I said, well, look, I would just give them the stuff. And then I wasn't actually robbed. I was just being generous. And then that guy continues on whatever he does, and then whatever, we're good. And they said, well, I'd shoot him right in the face. I said, well, okay. I said, now, what if they weren't really, they're not presenting any bodily harm to me, right? Like, I can tell where some dude's going to harm me. Really, the guy's just trying to rob me. He's having a rough time. Either, I mean, he's a criminal for one, you know? So like, well, why give him the TV? I don't care. You know, take the TV. At least if he's not dead, he's got time left on his clock to come to know the Lord Jesus, as far as I'm concerned, you know? Like, I'll kill him if he's going to come after my children or my wife or something, right? But, like, if you're just here for the TV, take the TV, as far as I'm concerned.
Uh-huh.
And so their counterargument was, well, my home is my castle, and it's where I feel comfortable, and if a man comes in and tries to take my TV, I'm going to shoot him. And I said, here's the deal. You're valuing your property over the life of a man, and I think that's a problem. And they said, no. He said, you're right. You think that's a problem. I don't. And I said, I feel like you're – you know, because it was a guy who goes to church, you know, and I said, I feel like you actually have an argument with God on this one. Not as much me. Like, we talk about defending your family or whatever. There's some grayer areas on where we're probably going to sit. But, like, if a guy shows up and all he wants to do is rob you, and you know that, he does not present you any bodily harm, you know, you're just going to shoot the man because he ruined your peace. You're getting your peace from the wrong place. And I said, it's just an evaluation thing. And, boy, did I catch crap for this. I mean, for the next 3 days. Huh. For the next 3 days, I was lambasted on being an idiot and a fool. And every time I said something, they said, you're not arguing with Foost, you're arguing with God. I'm like, I'm like, that's not what I was saying.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if it was really, I mean, the guy's talking tough, but I'll bet you it was really happening and he's just taking the TV.
I mean, it's just,
you're not going to just take some dude's life.
I mean, right?
That's,
I mean, I get it. Yeah. Like a threat to the family. I hear you. Like, I feel we can have that argument either way.
I'll take
get
you
that.
Over you taking my child. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. You're going to come and be like, I'm taking your TV. I need more drugs. I'm like, take the TV. You know, I don't care.
Here's
you
some
need
cash.
You need a little more time. You know, and then his counter argument,
party in my medicine.
This is his counter argument was he goes, "What's a homeless guy going to do with the TV anyway?" I'm like, "He's going to sell it." Do you not know anybody who is down on their luck? You think he's going to put it in his tent and just marvel over the TV he's acquired?
It's a 42-incher.
For heaven's sakes, get around, you know?
I hear his color.
So it's funny. The reason I brought that up is because that survey goes to the same thing, right? Like if you say that, like God sets the principles, God, the Bible sets my way of life, or you believe that he is the all-knowing creator of the world, and then you read his Bible and don't listen to anything he says, I have a hard time believing that you believe the first thing. Right?
Well,
that makes it hard to understand.
There's a 50-point swing between those who thinks it's the word of God and those who thinks it's life-changing.
Yeah.
I think, well, then it's not the word of God, is it?
Yeah, it doesn't even make any sense.
Well, maybe the guy is going to say, my life didn't change because I was already rotten.
It's a very small God.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, so that's interesting because I think the same group of thinkers came out of that similar survey we talked about a couple weeks ago, which is this acknowledgement that there is a God and then having no real reaction to that at all, right? Like even the thought of, where people say, if there is a God, I don't know, I'm upset with him, or he's a jerk, or something or other. And you're like, the concept of him being a God, I feel like, and you not, kind of, shouldn't that kind of influence, like, what you think of it? Like, doesn't they get to determine what's right or not?
You would think. I mean,
and I get coming from, like, think about your Egyptian gods, your Greek gods, your Roman gods. Like, they weren't all upstanding characters. These were not virtuous gods. These were like, hey, some were jerks, some were not. You just had to put up with it because you're a peon and they're gods.
Right.
But like, that isn't the premise of the question that we're asking. We're talking, is the God of the Bible the God, the creator of the universe, the writer of the scripture, and a real being? And if your reaction to that is, oh yeah, I think there's a God, and then like you have no like tangible, I don't know, reaction to words where he says, you know what, this isn't right, and you're like, well, you know, I could take it or leave it.
Yeah. I wonder part of that though is they're weak. We're humans. We're weak. We all have weaknesses.
Right.
And they're just justifying their sin rather than trying to fight it. They've just given up. And so like, yeah, he's God, and I'm a jerk. But,
Yeah, but that's not what they're saying, though. That's like, because that's what you would say, and that's what I would say, is like, the God of the Bible is right. I am wrong. I strive to do more as the God of the Bible, you know, has laid out for me, right? But they're flat out saying, the God of the Bible wrote it, and he's a deity. I just don't, I'm not digging on most of it.
These are modern times.
It's flat out not going to change my life at all, regardless of where he sits. It's just like people that have, we have authority problems all over the place in our bootstrap America. You know what I'm saying? Like, people have a hard enough time listening to their boss. They're like, I don't care who that guy is or what he makes a year. No one's going to boss me around. Well, you know, they have the same attitude as they're sitting in the unemployment line. They're like, I showed him. Nothing changed.
Yeah, right. I'm not under his thumb anymore.
Yeah. That guy was just stupid. Well, who's stupid now? You're making no money.
Actually, so I think that's the deal, is like, we are, these are people, like, we're not putting two thoughts together. We're keeping two thoughts in separate bags in different parts of the room and refuse to acknowledge they're in the same house.
Yeah.
And so like, we just don't connect things. The guy in the unemployment line is like, screw that employer of mine. I don't have to do the stuff he says. Like, you're at the behest of the government, sitting among everybody waiting for someone to hand you out something, and you lost total control over your life.
That's right.
And you're like, ha ha, because you've got two distinct thoughts that you refuse to put together. And so I think that's the problem. Like, people, we're not connecting anything.
Yeah.
We have such a, like, a dichotomized life where we can just believe things that have to have no tangible connection to other things that we think, and we just don't have a problem with it whatsoever.
How? I mean, like, just psychologically, what, like, I believe in gravity, but I'll go ahead and jump off this building. We don't do that.
Yeah.
I mean,
screw you, gravity.
Because we really believe in gravity.
Yeah, no, I think that's the point, right? Like, is the thing that we don't really believe.
We think we should believe it, so we're saying, yeah, I believe.
Yeah.
We're trying to convince ourselves, but my actions say otherwise.
That's right. I was having a discussion with someone, it was a class of people a couple years ago, and we were talking about how the Bible uses believe. And I said, look, like, we're misunderstanding that as like as just an acknowledgement or an agreement with Jesus, right? Like, when we say believe something, it has tangible impact to your life. And you actually react to it one way or the other. And I got some pushback because they're like, you know, I think you're interpreting that wrong to try to get people to act a certain way when the Bible is just saying, you know, like, whoever believes in Jesus will have eternal life. And he's like, look at the disciples. And I said, Jesus didn't have to make that distinction to the disciples. They already understood it, right? They didn't have this chasm between what I believe and what I do. They were following the man.
Right.
They gave up everything and followed him. Everyone died for him. Like, and there was some ignorance in the disciples pretty consistently about understanding fully what Jesus was about. But like, I mean, when Jesus said, believe in me, they did not take that as just a mindful assent. Like, they recognized at least that it meant that we have to react to the things that he's doing, and right. It means tangible changes in life. And so, like, it's a cultural thing that we have to connect those two things modern day. Like, they weren't having to read believe and go, oh, I can just say, oh, I agree with Jesus and he came to save me and now I feel loved. And like, and think that it has no physical or tangible impact on how we live our lives. Like, that's actually something we created, not something the Bible failed to address.
Yeah. I usually use the example with the kids is the stool in the room, right? Like, you can believe there's a stool in the room, but if you never sit in it, you don't actually believe it's there, because who would stand, right, when there is a stool available? But they're like, yeah, I believe it's there. I base my life on this stool. Have you ever sat in it? No, man. No, I can't. I can't be sitting
couldn't
in that stool.
That.
You know?
No, I'm comforted daily by it. But no, I don't.
Right.
It's
my source of joy, just the fact that it exists only. My legs are tired. I've been standing for 15 years, but I can't sit in that stool.
Yeah, all right. So I was trying to see. Let's see. The group has remained fairly stable in recent years. Let's see, of the 19% up from 10% in 2011 says it's simply a book of teachings and stories written by men. Okay, so you're up to 20% of people who think that. That group has remained fairly stable in recent years. It was 17 in 2013, 19 in 2014, 21. Okay, it's gone up, I guess. They asked the people in that category a new question. If you think the Bible was written only by humans, do you think it was meant to be manipulative or controlling? I actually wondered this question myself, to be honest. Like, it's a to what end, right? Like,
exactly.
If it's written by, like, you go read, I don't know, Amos or Mark. Like, to what were they actually trying to get you to do that benefited them?
Yeah.
In their service. So, almost 4 out of 5 skeptics said yes. So that it adds was designed to be manipulative, which adds up to 13% of the U.S. population. I just don't understand, like, to what, besides the fact that you think that's the case.
They invented the pyramid scheme where ultimately all the cash went back to Matthew.
Yeah, right. he was just a really good tax collector.
Well, so like, if I was sitting on the other side of that fence, I would say, it's designed to put money back in the churches, and the churches want to make money and have big cash. That's exactly what they think, right? But like, if you look at the teachings of, say, Jesus, the one that we're going to cornerstone this thing around, like, he spent his entire life serving people and living homeless and pretty much and imploring people to not do that very thing, right? To not worship the money that the society is running on. He said, basically, just, you know, serve people. That's your job on this earth, is to serve others and love me. And that's what I want you to do, right? And so, like, any misgivings that they have on the goals of this manipulative book are only evidenced when people aren't following it anyway, right? Like, only when you're putting in concept of sinful people. But like, the commands coming from the God and the God man are none of those things.
It says they separated the groups into the American Bible Society and Barna labeled them antagonistics. They used the same tag in 2013 for the entire group of skeptics. But then reconsider. It says, antagonistic may too strongly pigeonhole those who have not yet embraced the Bible. The new categorization, Bible skeptics, is both more accurate and more helpful. So here's how they made the distinction. Said, the survey broke the group into two and found a marked difference between the resulting 32% that remained skeptics and those who believe the Bible was not divinely inspired, but neither was it written with the intent to manipulate, and the 68% that qualify as antagonistics. Researchers summarized the two groups. Antagonistics, average age is 41. He is more likely to be an unmarried male from Gen X or millennial generation. I mean, how can he be 41 and be in two generations?
Yeah, wait.
never mind. Antagonistics are largely non-Christian. Duh.
Hey, man, he can't even get a woman to get along with him. I mean, what kind of dude are we talking about here?
I've seen a common denominator here. It's the dude.
He does not attend church, and a small 5% report reading the Bible at least 3 to 4 times a year. Skeptics are slightly older, on average 43 years old. More college graduates fall into this category than any other category. They are largely single and not Christian, and most are in church. What's going on in the colleges? Why are we producing people that fit this?
They're single, non-Christian, and in church?
No, unchurched.
Unchurched, gotcha.
Antagonists are more likely than skeptics to be white or Hispanic. They're less likely than skeptics to make under $60,000 a year and more likely to make over $100,000 a year. Hmm. They're notably less open to the Bible. 91% of antagonists have no desire to read the Bible more compared to 74% of skeptics. That's interesting. So 74% of the people that have said they believe the Bible is written by men – have no desire to read the Bible more. That means 25% do.
Yeah.
I mean, of people who you would, if hey, I'm a Bible skeptic, and you'd be like, eh, like you think this is not an opportunity, I got one out of four who's like, yeah, I know, I read the Bible more.
Yeah.
And even 9% of the people that are antagonistic toward the thing are like, yeah, I read it. I mean, it's just something to think about when you approach people and you start saying, hey, we've lost the deal. No one wants to listen to me. That guy certainly doesn't want to hear it. I mean, you got one of four, one of ten.
He may be open.
Yeah, yeah. It said nearly three quarters of antagonists believe the Bible has too much influence on U.S. society compared to less than half of skeptics. Also extremely interesting. 42% of the skeptics said that the Bible has too much influence on U.S. society. The others are like, it doesn't say whether they're for or blah about it, but that's interesting that over half aren't concerned, or they're seeing underlying moral benefit from having it be part of the tapestry.
I like it when people don't murder me.
I'm in. Let's see. They also fewer antagonistic adults believe the Bible is important for the country's moral fabric. 9%. Is that the same 9 who will read more? Maybe it is.
Maybe so.
Compared to 30% of skeptics, which nearly all, 91% compared to 70% of skeptics, believe the Constitution is morally important.
Hey, Ben.
What?
Here's the thing. For a guy that's sworn off these surveys, like you really are really interested in them.
No, I'm sorry. Shoot.
You're losing me in these numbers. You know what I'm saying? You just keep saying numbers and then saying that's an interesting point, and then I can't follow exactly what the point you're making.
Okay, no, that's fine. All right, here, I'm going to give you two more things.
Okay.
They don't care about being labeled immoral. Only 21% were bothered about being labeled immoral, compared to 41% of skeptics and 36% of the Bible engaged or Bible friendly. Hey, shoot. Well, now
go
I don't
ahead,
know.
Go ahead, Ben. Rip it out.
Hey, that's interesting. So, if skeptical people were more concerned about being labeled immoral than the people that were Bible engaged or Bible friendly.
What? Yeah.
By 5%? I don't know. Mike.
Maybe because they're not concerned because they figure, well, I won't be labeled that because I'm not doing it.
Because I'm holy.
However, last week's survey says they are.
They
doing
are. This. They are very much this problem. Can I date a lamp? 8-10% says that's not adultery. Okay. Ooh. However, being called intolerant is particularly bothersome to antagonistics. A quarter would find that offensive compared to 21% that said immoral was a problem compared with 4% of skeptics or the Bible engaged. Also interesting.
Very.
Okay. All right, Michael. All right.
You got Mike right where you want him.
There's a series of charts, Mike.
No more, Ben.
I got a series of charts.
My brain just shuts down, and I'm like, can we just talk to him? Can I have a conversation with the guy? Because I don't know how to deal with these facts. I mean, what am I going to roll up to a man like, are you the 9% antagonistic that feels like you don't want to be intolerant? Oh, and you're not interested in the Bible, but might be?
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Okay. I mean, I think it should at least cause you to rethink, and we shouldn't have this.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, though.
You shouldn't do this anyway.
Yeah, just make a blank statement.
Don't talk yourself out of it.
Don't act like you know people, right? You're going to share the gospel. That's what you're going to do. Stop qualifying it. Stop saying this is the guy. Just tell the man. It's good news to you. Tell other people.
Yeah.
There, done.
Yeah, right. If he's an antagonist, I feel like you'll figure it out pretty soon.
Yeah.
Hey, I hate what you're saying.
You don't see James being like the Hellenistic whatever dudes causing me the trouble, and the 15% of them are the Jesuits and blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? He's like, you tell the gospel, do it now.
See, most of us treat discipleship and evangelism like I treated dating in high school. Like, I only asked someone out if I already knew, confirmed triple times, that they were going to say yes. Then I'd really be daring and say, hey, want to go out?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, hey, that guy is carrying a Bible, and he's got a part on the side, and he says First Baptist on his shirt.
Bible and part on side. I mean, come on. He's Baptist right now.
I'm going to go ahead and talk to him about Jesus.
Seems pretty safe. Don't put the door knocker on that other fellow's door.
You know, sometimes it's actually scarier for me to talk to if I find another Jesus man.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've made this mistake before. I was talking to some guy that I met at work or whatever, And he was a Jesus man, and I'm like, cool, we got stuff to talk about, you know, and we got on the subject of, you know, one of the finer points between Protestant and Catholicism, and I didn't realize he was a Catholic, and I may have said some things, you know, and I thought, well, just, and I said, blah, 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 and that's just hard to swallow, and he's like, yeah, actually, I believe that, and we practice that at my house. I'm like, crap.
This is not that hard to swallow.
Well, I guess it's all right, you know. I don't know. So that stinks, because what if we don't, you know, what if I run into Hillsong or whatever, you know, and they're like, you're playing Jay Nobody, you know, you ain't done, you know, making a big hairy deal out of this thing, and you're screwing it up. And I'm like, crap, then they're judging me for my non-Hillsong. What am I going to do?
The Catholic guy's like, you got it wrong, Mike. Transubstantiated Jesus goes down smooth.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And I've been cheating on my wife with all the 68% of the population. We think it's fine.
All right. Well, I mean, that's it. That was the thing, Mike. That's what I ran across.
Okay,
this week.
But now let me ask you this, Ben. So yep. This is the third week in a row you've been slogging through these things, and so about five times or so you're like, interesting. So how has that changed the way that you view anything?
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, what do you, going forward? What are you going to do different?
Learn to stop saying I won't read the surveys. is that the right thing?
Just be me.
I mean, it probably doesn't. It doesn't make a difference on what you do. I suppose the question is whether is it helpful to have an idea to know where people are starting from. Actually, I had this conversation with a guy who's part of a church plant in Risley. Right, so Risley was in town.
Yeah.
So we've had him on the show before. And so we were talking about, like, what do you actually need to know when you're talking about trying to bring the gospel to people and you're doing it. He's in a Mormon context. So the question is, like, I mean, how much of a Mormon context do you need to have? Like, how much of these discussions are you actually going kind of point for point on Mormonism? And do you need to know that to fire up a conversation with a guy? Or, like, to the extent that you can figure out where people's barriers are to knowing or following Jesus, like, won't that just come out naturally in conversation? And I think it came out that for the most part, it's not like you have to be, like, ultra prepared. Right? So, like, even in that kind of context, the truth is that, like, when you start talking about Jesus, people will say, yeah, but blah, 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 right? And so, you have a chance to kind of interact with that. So, to the extent that you know Jesus and love other people, and they're willing to tolerate you continuing that conversation with them, true discipleship or true introducing good news to people, with people that you're actually in relationship with and caring about, probably generally goes okay without having to come, like, front loaded with a bunch of stuff. The thing that is difficult to do is if you're going to get in some kind of street preacher argument with another guy who's Mormon, but, like, you're not going to do that because it's not effective.
Right.
Right. It doesn't actually change your case. Now, the truth is, if your context is you're constantly running into those people, and making friends where you have large groups of people who believe similar things, yeah, you're going to be interested in it. You're going to get questions on it, and you will build up that information, and it will actually help, right? To know where people are going to go and be able to speak to it, without having to, you know, follow up with them later. But, like, in general, that really isn't the significant barrier, is to know everything you need to know about Mormonism or Islam to be able to talk to some guy about that. Because most of them, frankly, are like most Christians, in which they're not really they don't really know most of it. They're not practicing the thing they believe, in quotes, anyway. They're dating a lamp, right? So, like these are not people, you're not running into, people that have, that know everything down pat. In fact, your average atheist knows more about Christianity, Mormonism, and Islam than you do. Because they're upset about it. And when they're pissed, then they go through and they figure out reasons why they should be more upset about it. But the actual person that's following it, in your average U.S. church, you know, they're not really a strong apologetic. And so that's not the conversation you're running into. What changes people, though, is seeing people's changed lives around them. Because that they can see. Then they see a guy, they see how they're being treated, they see how people are, interacting with him. I read an article about a guy who used to be an Islamic terrorist, and he meets Jesus through both Christians and a series of dreams, and, like, he starts leading a bunch of people to Christ, and their reactions are, like, no one told us how nice these Christians were. Like they had no, like the things that they had heard about Christianity, they expected Christians to be awful people. And part of what helped tell the story of good news is kind people doing good things that otherwise feels like good news in the context of the stories they're telling. And so it's just one of those deals where, you know, if you're loving Jesus and loving people and taking people along with on your journey for following Christ, like, you'll pick up information as you go, and if you care about people, you'll want to know more about their context, and you'll get it. But this thought that you have to be kind of front-loaded with a bunch of cultural information, I think is unnecessary. So the whole reason I went and left that tangent, though, is the question is, does it help me to understand that people, there's a crazy amount of people who think it's okay to commit adultery, and who wouldn't call it that? Is that helpful for me in having a conversation with someone? I mean, I don't know, maybe. Except for, I don't know, you know, they're not the survey, right? They have their own personal experience. They have their own definitions of what happens and what they allow and what they don't allow. And I wouldn't know that without asking them. So to the extent that I have to ask them or get that information anyway, what good does it do me to have an idea of what it might be? So I mean, maybe it's not helpful.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not valuable to know at all.
Yeah. Hey, does the phrase throwing shade, is that a positive deal or a negative deal?
That's negative.
Someone says, hey, they're throwing shade at Ben.
Yeah.
That means he's causing the trouble.
No, that means that, yeah, they're casting the pall upon me, the darkness.
Negative press.
Yeah.
Not helping a guy out by keeping him out of the sun.
No, it's not.
I've never quite understood that phrase. After you said dating a lamp, I thought lampshade, shade, throwing shade. I wonder what that means. All right, I'm going to try to use it later in the show. See that I've solidified it. I'm not 100% that I quite understand it. It still seems to me like you're getting burned by the sun and someone's throwing you shade and trying to help you out of the sun.
No. Yeah, I'm not sure though. I'd look it up on the Urban Dictionary, but that's a dangerous place to be hanging out. Is that Urban Dictionary?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm gonna assume that the general public usage of it is what I think it is.
All right, that's fine.
It's derogatory. All right. Mike, did I hear, maybe I saw this on Facebook or whatever, but you said someone had mistaken you for the Pope this week?
Yeah, it was flat out crazy. It was flat out crazy.
So I mean, how did you react to it, and how did you ultimately get rid of these people?
Well, here's the thing: is they mistook me from the Pope when I was at the Get and Go, and I don't know if it's because I drive like a kind of an uptown vehicle, and so I thought maybe they thought that maybe I had been in town.
Wait, were you in a minivan?
No. I was in my work apparatus.
I don't think someone mistook you for the Pope because you were in some kind of giant box truck.
Well, they thought it was the assassinator vehicle, or whatever. Keep people out.
Okay.
So anyway, I was trying to get to whatever, No Henry and a soda or whatever, and they're like, Pope tells some advice or whatever. And I said, no, I don't have time. I got some work to do. And they insisted. And so I said, okay, here's the deal. I'm gonna have to give out some advice so these people will get away from my vehicle so I can get back to work. And so I pondered for a second, and I thought about something that would apply both to me and them. And I realized something. I mean, it's not big. It's not even complicated. It's real simple, and Jesus said to do it. And I thought, whiz bang, this is the advice to give, you know? And I thought, attention, people, you need to serve people. and that's it. And I thought, here's the deal. Here's the thing that I really stink at is I know for a fact that serving people brings me joy. Like it's the thing I actually love to do. And then I seem to put it off for a while and then start worrying more about me for a bit. And I'm like, I have to be able to handle my own business here. You know, otherwise things will get out of hand. Or, you know, if I'm not paying attention to my own driving here, you know, it's going to run off the rails and I got to set myself up for this, you know. And then I've done that for a while only to realize that actually any joy that I had was serving people. Say 6 months ago, and I had bailed on it. You know what I'm saying? And so, I started trying this out, and I'm to minimal success, right? I can do better, right? But I started designating days where this is what I'm going to do all day. It's going to be my concentration, and it's going to be my focus of the day. Because if I'm just like I'm going to do one nice thing for somebody, it'll be something stupid. You know what I'm saying? Like I got a glass of water for a guy, which that was great, you know. But like that's not the servant's heart thing I'm going for, right?
Right.
Like I want to serve all people. I want to have a servant attitude towards other people. I want to look at other people in a way that they all look higher than me. You know what I'm saying? That all of them, when I look at them, I see people that I would like to serve. Not help, not charity, not I feel bad for them because they're lower than me, but like I want to serve them because of who they are. They have an inherent worth that makes me as a person want to serve them, right? And so I tried this once last week, and I made it about an hour or 2 hours. You know what I'm saying? I kind of did all right just right out of the gate, and then it floundered a little bit, and I started running for Mike again, you know, somewhere around 10 o'clock. And so I wanted to start doing this every week where I basically pick a day, and usually I pick Tuesday because right after the radio show and I got done thinking about it. Where like, this is my serve people day. And where I'm praying all day, like, I just don't want to run out of gas. I don't want to run out of intent. I don't want to run out of passion for this work, to do this today. And, you know, for the 2 hours that I pulled it off, it was awesome. It really was. It was awesome. Like I was looking at people that I just don't like them. You know what I'm saying? We don't get along well. But as soon as I decide that I don't like somebody, it puts them in a place where, I'm not serving them. I can't love them. You know what I'm saying? And it's a terrible place for them to be. And it's an even worse place for me to be. It's not looking at God's people as I should. It's not looking at people the way that God looks at them. And I'm like, this just sucks. And it equals, you know, do this for a couple months, right? And you find yourself hanging out in the middle of a field going, you know, well, I got a bunch of stuff done for me. And, I've been fighting for my way. So I don't want to look stupid, and I want to be right. And all these little battles you fought over the last couple months. And you're like, where'd it get me? It got me kind of miserable. Kind of sad and defeated, kind of out of energy, and it's not near as refreshing as doing what God asked me to, which was love Him and serve people.
Right.
And so that's my Pope style advice. It's not hard. I know what you're thinking. You're like, how am I going to do this? I got to make a big to-do out of it. I either got to get a shirt, or I got to write the things down. I got to make a list.
Get a journal and a name tag.
Yeah. Don't do all that stuff. You're doing this wrong, right? Just show up and think like when you look out over a sea of people. Just think, I work for these guys today, right? I want to help these guys, even if it's in small ways, even if it's a, hey, I'm going to the supply closet, you need a piece of paper, you know, I'll get you the pad, or, you know, I got donuts for y'all, or, you know, even if it's thinking about that friend you ain't seen in 6 months, and you're like, I should call him, but it's weird, and it's awkward, and I haven't talked to him in a while, and maybe we're spreading apart a little bit, but just call the man. Text him, say, hey, what's up? I'm just thinking about you. That's all. Don't tell lies. You know, don't be like, I miss you so much. We're best friends. You know what I'm saying? Just tell him the truth. You know, just be like, I mean, if you ain't been praying for him, don't be telling him that you've been praying for him. You know, don't tell lies, but just like, hey man, look, you popped into my head and I haven't seen you in a while. How are things going? You know, when people pop in your head to that you haven't talked to in a while, call them. You know, when it comes up to like, hey man, I should swing by and grab a 20-ounce soda from my buddy Kevin Carson, do that. Stop by and grab it. I just did this morning. In fact, I was driving into work and I worked pretty close to a friend of mine and I thought I should stop and get Kevin a soda. And I thought, he's probably already got one. Or he's probably got soda at the place he works. I won't stop. You know, what would it hurt? I'd have been down $1.50. I'd have saw the man, said, hey, how's it going? Hope you have a good day. Handed him an extra soda. And he's doubly blessed.
Yeah, right. What's someone going to be like? This is ridiculous. You know I have soda here. Yes. Get out.
Yeah, like I have an endless supply.
It's so stupid, the things that keep me from doing something I want to do, you know? And so, like, I thought, I don't want to live that way, you know? And so if it means doing something intentional and albeit, as far as I'm concerned, a bit stupid, you know, creating a servant day on Tuesdays, you know, but it's what I have to do. I want my life to be a life that serves Jesus and serves people. And like, I can't actually get that done unless I do that. Right? Like, I mean, Ben's classic is you live your life like you live your minutes, like you live your hours, like you live your days. And so like, it takes 1 minute to stop by and grab this soda and say hi to my buddy Kevin. Tell him I'm thinking about him, because I thought about buying him that soda, and I want to know how he's doing. So great, I can stop by and give him this soda, say, hope you have a good day. You know, you want to start do lunch later, let me know, whatever, I'm out. I'm going to work. And so that's my Pope style advice. Just try it out. I promise you, God didn't ask us to do this so it would be a heavy burden of loads. Like, He wants to help you carry this, and like I know it seems like an exhaustible supply that you have to help people, but He replenishes that, and you got to trust Him to do it. Sit on that stool in the middle of the room that you believe in.
Right. And I suppose that's the thing, right? Like, if you look around and think of how much stuff is dragging you down, and you're like, I got a lot of heavy burdens. I'm like, well, maybe that's not the Lord's burden there. You know, like maybe you're carrying around a lot of your stuff, and like the stuff that God has for you, it's not that they're not a burden. It's just that like they're a lighter load, or like you have the energy or you have the perseverance to actually to get through them because it's the right work. And I think God provides that for you. I think a lot of the times, even as Christians, where we get weighed down is like we're pursuing the things that aren't they're just not the right things, and we're carrying them all on our own because it wasn't Jesus' work to begin with, and we're like, we're out of energy, and we're out of time, and we're out of focus, and like,
You know, it's just like that stuff's difficult to maintain because it's not the right work and you're trying to do it all on your own. But like if you can take on some of the burdens that Jesus is offering, just know that he helps with them. Like that's kind of the point. I think there's energy in that. I think there's goodness in that. And you're not going to be not burdened. A Christian life is kind of an inherent. My wife and I were talking about this the other day is like, we were talking about how much, how many of our friends have had, parents have had marital issues, right? Like how people aren't married anymore. And so like grandparents aren't around to watch kids or they're fighting over stuff or like, you know, people are dealing with just weird circumstances with their peripheral families. And we said like, if you're not a Christian, right, like you at least have the option to write somebody off and just say, hey, you know, I don't care about that person anymore. They treated me poorly and they're gone. I said, the Christians just don't get to live that way. Like we have to keep praying for people and we have to keep hoping that they meet Jesus and trying to be part of that work and so that those things will change. So like there are things that just as a Christian, your burden for the world is implicitly heavier or broader than what someone who's probably agnostic gets to do just by the what our faith gives us. However, it is a light burden because Jesus is there to help carry it. And there's energy in being able to continue to persevere through those things because he's there and because you get the Holy Spirit kind of involved in those types of things. And so I think that's the deal, right? Is like you look at it and say, I don't have time or money or whatever to serve another person or to like focus on these things. And like, if it's God's work, I feel like it'll happen. It'll like the stuff will show up. The energy will be there. And that kind of thing. If it's just your stuff, you're trying to manufacture things for different reasons, then, yeah, I think you're going to feel that and it's going to weigh you down.
Yeah. Serve people.
All right. Hey, you're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging with us, so far tonight. Mike, we just maybe a couple advice action.
Okay. Hang on. I had a couple prepared. You ready?
Dear Live from the Path, I'm dating a lamp. My wife is okay with it.
My wife is.
Is it really adultery, though?
My wife is throwing me some shade. Best joke ever. Dear Life from the Path, whenever I give my longtime friend a gift, her immediate reaction is to tell me, oh no. Then she immediately offers to give me money for the gift. When I give someone a gift, it is because I like that person, and I'm excited to give them something I think they would like. When she tells me I shouldn't have done it, and keeps asking me how much money she owes me, I feel very hurt. Now her daughter, whom I consider like my family, has learned it from her mom and does the same thing when I give her a gift. Life from the Path, why do they react that way? I always give from my heart. Okay. I mean,
this was a girlfriend he started with?
I don't have any idea.
Did I just make that up?
I have a longtime friend.
Yeah, a long-time friend.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, if you just wanted to say you was great, you could have just done that in a sentence or whatever.
maybe she's saying, I don't want to be your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Don't make this a romantic gift. I'm going to pay for this.
It's weird that
Wait, hold on a minute. Like, is there an implication of romance?
No.
I thought it was like older
friends. No, it's
ladies.
Yeah, it's
two lady friends.
Yeah, but you go around buying gifts for women all the time? That's kind of
weird.
Are
you a woman, Dan? What do you know the gift-giving ways of ladies?
I don't give gifts to women who aren't romantically involved with me.
I think this is a woman.
Like a 50-year-old woman to another 50-year-old woman.
Oh, I was just making a romance.
Tighten in the reins, Dan.
Hey, that adultery survey really just got, yeah. Dan said the whole field's open.
If somebody cares, it
changes everything.
I think it's old. Imagine gray hairs doing this thing. And they're the daughter of one of the gray hairs is the same way. Doesn't take gifts very well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a couple of awkward pieces to this, right? Like, obviously this keeps happening. And so, I mean, have you had the conversation? To say, hey, look, you know, it makes it awkward when you say this. I just want to give you a gift and you can show how much you care for me as a friend by just keeping the gift and not bringing up the dollars. Like, have you talked about it?
Here's the thing. You're the passive friend in this relationship, right? Most friends, there's two friends. They're either on completely equal playing fields or there's an alpha and then there's like a B-level guy. This woman's the B-level guy, right? Because if alpha gives a gift and B-level goes, no, I can't accept that. How much do I owe you? Alpha goes, you don't owe me nothing. It's none of your business. Take the gift. That's it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Says, you're just taking it. I'm not going to explain nothing to you. You're taking a gift. And this woman's worried about the rebuttal. You know, about someone saying, oh, no, how much do I owe you? You don't owe me anything. That's why it's called a gift. Don't bring it up again. So I feel like she's just a meek person. You know what I'm saying? She's like, it's pretty easy to rebut someone trying to pay you for stuff. I do it all the time. You know, people are like, here, I owe you money. I'm like, no, you don't. And I can run faster than you. So you just will put that stuff away. Like, there's an easy way to get out of all that stuff. And she just, I think she's just the meek person in the relationship.
This is colored by what I was taught as a very young man in a church, a pastorate. In college, they said, if someone gives you something, you just say thank you and go on.
Yeah.
I mean, don't fight it. Don't make a big deal out of it. Don't keep bringing it up. Just say thank you. They did it because they wanted to. And why would you fight that?
Right. Like, so either they wanted to, or let's say you're real concerned about things of this nature and you think they're trying to manipulate you. Either way, a simple thanks and not making a big deal out of it solves both problems.
Yeah, but we're talking about the woman on the other side. What does she do? When they're not saying thank you, they're saying, no, I can't accept this. No, how much is it?
Well, that's right. This is the woman giving the gift.
Yeah.
Well, she needs to just, again, give the gift and whatever. I mean, if you wanted to give it, you gave it. Move on.
I'd almost comedy rule it from here on out. Like every time she says, oh, no, I can't accept this. How much do I owe you? I would run for my car and leave.
And like laugh maniacally?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Here's the thing. It sounds outrageous, but someone refusing a gift multiple times over X number of years, it's outrageous anyway.
Yeah,
or take the social cues and say, okay, stop buying this particular person a gift.
Yeah, or stop doing this. You know, they don't dig on your gifts. Maybe you're buying crappy
stuff.
They're
trying to tell
you
something.
Yeah, I mean, here's
listening.
Actually, that's a good thought, though, is like if you give gifts to people, and obviously is making them uncomfortable in some way or another,
yeah.
Like, then why would, like, stop doing it.
You're not helping.
Right. This is like you think you've done a good thing, but you know that you've not. You know you've made them feel awkward and they don't know how to handle it. So just stop doing it.
Yeah, so if you're giving from the heart, give with the heart nothing. Because that's what they really want.
Yeah. And then give hugs. And then if they say, how much was that? Say $8,000.
Yeah, so I
don't hug me again.
You think it's because the B-level friend doesn't make a whole lot of money? You know, like, I run into this, so like, if you go do some work for, like, a retired person or whatever, you know, and they'll be like, you know, I owe you something for your time, you know, and you're always like, no, it's fine. I just like hanging out with you or whatever, you know, and they'd be trying to slip you money left and right, you know, and they're very insistent upon it, but you're like, look, you want a fixed income. I'm okay, you know, I appreciate what you're doing, but just keep your money. And they insist upon it, right? Like, I get maybe the premise if it's kind of that thing going on, but still, like, in the end, I always take the money. Right, they want to give it. You can't stop them. You know what I'm saying? It makes them feel bad if you don't take it.
Right.
And so you just accept it and say, you know, thank you.
Yeah, read your situation. Figure out something sweet to say. Like someone that tries to give it to you, say, look, my time is very valuable, and I'm glad to spend it with you. And then if they insist past something real sweet like that, then you take the money.
Yeah, just take it.
Then you take it.
Secular says, I suspect your friend learned this behavior the way her daughter has from her mother. You might ask your friend to explain.
Grandma in.
Yeah,
man.
Grandma uncomfortable here.
Yeah, just taking on all three generations here.
Grandma under the bus. Yeah, Grandma's probably dead. That's a really harsh thing to say.
Yeah, it is.
You're a dead mother.
You might ask your friend to explain why she does this when you give her a gift, because her reaction is peculiar. Could it be she feels unworthy? For heaven's sakes. Because you know that receiving gifts makes her uncomfortable, my advice is to quit giving her things.
Hey, maybe she's a backdoor Betty. Maybe she talks gossip about this other one all the time. So maybe she does feel guilty.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, no, I think Secular's on to something. Her mother's a real cheat and she's a gossip hound.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah, you can usually tell that out of a couple paragraphs someone you've never met. All of a sudden it's a lineage of crazy Bettys and won't accept nothing. That's terrible. All right. Dear Life from the Path, I have a girlfriend. We've been dating for almost 2 months. We both love each other so much and think we are the perfect match. But she is going, oh man. But she's going to high school, and I'm a year younger, which puts me in 8th grade. Holy cats, dude. We live close to each other, so we see each other on the weekends. She has been accepted to an amazingly good school, but it's in downtown. What should we do?
What?
Should we keep our relationship, or leave it, if we won't be able to see each other as often? Sign teens in love. Good night, man. You gotta do a little growing up here. Do you have a mustache? Hold on. He's in 8th grade. 8th grade, this girl got accepted to a whiz-bang high school, but she's going to be all the way in the downtown.
But she's not moving.
No?
They see each other on weekends, so they've been together 2 months, which is a total of 8 weekends, and they're madly in love.
Yeah, almost 2 months, Dan. Not quite two. Yeah, almost two.
So they've gone on 6 to 8 dates.
They love each other so much, we're perfect. Perfect match.
And they may be. They might be. But get educated.
I mean, you're going
to
get...
Better go to school.
You're going to get a car pretty soon, friend. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, you're in the 8th grade.
I mean, downtown's not exactly the Sahara. You know, get a part-time job, put some gas in a clunker, and go visit your woman if that's what you're going to do.
Yeah, save it for a moped. I mean, make an effort.
I mean... Yeah, it doesn't say she's moving downtown, though. I mean, she you can't see each other in school anyway. You're in different schools. Even if you're at junior high, she's in high school.
We live close to each other. So,
yeah, you see each other on the weekends. It doesn't matter where she goes to school.
I mean, is this standard eighth grade mentality? You know what I'm saying? Like, I get the puppy love thing, you know, where you're not really thinking straight or whatever, but like, this is just common sense stuff. I mean, even if she goes to school downtown, she's still got to come back to her house, which you live close by. You know, get a bus pass, ride a bike,
yeah.
Walk over there, make an early morning jaunt. I don't know.
Skype.
Yeah. Yeah, you might have put your shovel in the grave too fast, friend. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think this is the big ender you're envisioning.
Yeah. Stay connected. See how it goes.
Yeah, FaceTime. Text message.
But here's the deal. But, I mean, I, if no one else is saying this to you, I mean, you run the risk of being a real creeper here, buddy.
Yeah.
So, you know, stay in contact, and see how things kind of play out.
But Jenny, you're all the way in the downtown. We'll see each other on the weekend, Scott. I just, no, I can't.
No, you know, I'll moped over there directly.
Yeah, I mean, pull yourself together, man. You know, here's the thing. A woman likes to feel appreciated, but she doesn't want to feel like she's dragging you around. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't control yourself without her presence. And you've got to put a couple thoughts together and, you know, excel at band or football or whatever you do with yourself apart from this woman and do that, you know, and then add to her life. Don't just be another burden to her by stalking her in the downtown. It's just a weird move, dude. He needs a dad or something. Somebody needs to talk to this young man.
Yes.
Let's see. Secular says, if I told you to break up because in a few months you and this girl won't be able to see each other as often, would you do it? I don't think so. What I do suggest is that the two of you let this play out. Enjoy each other for now, and in the fall, if your feelings or hers change, discuss it then.
Is that what we said?
I was a little harsher on him.
Secular did it a little tactfully.
Yeah.
More
tactful. Yeah. I don't know. Is she right, though? You can't convince a man like this.
True.
He's in eighth grade.
Doesn't matter what she says.
I mean, here's the thing. Just the fact that he sees this as a deal breaker right here, just the fact that he can't be reasoned with.
No, that's true.
You know what I'm saying? She's still going to another school. We still live, I mean, he says close to each other. Let's say this is within a mile. You know? I mean, that's a good 20-minute walk if you're slow rolling it. You can get there in 20 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, you can skateboard. You can get one of them hovercrafts.
I mean, let's say you marry this woman and go on to live a happily married life. You're going to have to go to work, too. You know what I'm saying? You're going to have to leave her presence for 8-10 hours and then come home and see how she's doing. I think you can be away from her when she's at this amazing downtown school. You know, I mean, you just got to calm this down a little bit.
Yeah, actually, I suppose that is, like, what is the reaction for, like, his reaction is that, hey, what can I do to help stay connected and make this thing work? It's like, hey, do we cut it off? Are we ruined forever?
Yeah, your first instinct is to break up with this woman?
Yeah. Well, how about some industriousness, fellas? This is, hey, actually, that's the problem. We got a strain of dudes who, again, we can't put two thoughts together and say, hey, this is the thing. I would like this outcome. What can I do to make this outcome continue?
Right.
As opposed to, oh no, worry and woe.
It's not going my way.
What will occur here? What should I do? Should I call the whole thing off dramatically?
Yeah. Come on.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Hey, if you're a poor eighth grade boy who,
yeah,
I mean,
you're not the third way man.
Yeah, that's right. You're not the third way man. We're here to help. Shoot us an email, info@livefromthepath.org. We're here to, I mean, we can try to say you straight, buddy. There's nothing I can do. Maybe if you want some more tact, you go ahead and write the newspaper.
Yeah, your feelings aside, you're being a dullard here. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the problem. People go, oh, Jimmy's so in love. He's just hard. But no, he's being a doofus. He's got to be able to think clearer than this on the important things of his life. And this is important. And he's got to be able to put two thoughts together and say, look, you know, I want to make this work. I'm going to get a bus pass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. Like if your emotions are a good bellwether for how you act in any given situation, then it's okay to eat a Kit Kat at every break.
Yeah.
None of those things are true. You can't just live your life like this. All right, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. I don't know what's going on next week. I'll let you know when we get there. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.